Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name's Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And we are joined today by Joel Kapischke, Jelana Ponasek, and Marcy Doherty Elst. Yay! Yay! We're up in Milwaukee today. We're in my mom's living room, which is...
Lovely.
It's Scoppy North.
Mm-hmm. It's very tasteful. Yeah.
It is very tasteful. Mm-hmm.
Tastefully appointed.
Yeah.
We're surrounded by stained glass windows and leaded glass. Mm-hmm. Beautiful sunlight coming in. Hardwood floors.
No, it's way more spacious than the actual Scoppy studio, which is like a nook in our apartment.
Mm-hmm. And our one-bedroom Chicago basement apartment.
Yeah. So it's always like nice to not have to be like crammed in on each other. Like in the normal Scoppy studio. Mm-hmm. But
thank you for coming up to Milwaukee to chat with us.
Yeah, of course.
Honestly, any excuse to come up to Milwaukee, I'll take.
Mostly did it for the Vanguard last night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have vegan poutine.
Nice. It's very good. Yeah. No, Milwaukee's vegan food is on point. It's
surprisingly
great. Yeah.
You wouldn't think that. I don't know why.
Well, it's either a vegetarian option that is like slathered in cheese. It's really just like fire vegan food.
I was going to say the aggressive beer and cheese marketing might lead you to believe that there's little else.
Yeah.
Right.
Which
yeah,
is
exactly.
not true.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it used to be true.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. So I've been a vegetarian since you were born,
probably. We were talking about dating ourselves earlier and yeah. I think it's appropriate, though, that we were discussing the dating of ourselves, because the project that we're here to discuss is a chorus line. It is a collaboration between Milwaukee Opera Theater and Theater Red, presented at Cardinal Stritch University. And I'd love to hear, and it is a different take on it, which is super cool, and I'd love to hear one of you talk about it.
Marcy should talk about this.
Yes,
you're the person who started it.
Well,
your fault, basically.
It is my fault. That's true. It did start with sort of this crazy germ of an idea that I had probably 5 or 6 years ago now. And it was one of those things where, I love a chorus line, and I was a figure skater, so I did some dancing when I was younger, but as a performer, to me, watching a chorus line, even as I was older, it was like, well, dance is really a metaphor for so much else, right? It's a show about growing up, which I think everybody can relate to, and dance in that show really, to me, represented acting, singing, performing, all those things. But the idea came about because I thought, gosh, when I first started out in theater, I had this idea that, well, once I've worked here or worked with this person or done this many shows, then I'm going to feel really confident and not so desperate at auditions. Mm. And I'm really going to feel like,
haha,
I'm still waiting for that moment. But to me, this idea of the opening number and that feeling of, God, I hope I get it as a young, whether it's young age-wise or young experience-wise, young performer is a very sort of hungry feeling. And you have this idea in your head that after a while, it won't feel so, you won't be so nervous at an audition or you won't feel so desperate. But I've found that as I've gotten older and done more shows and worked with more and more people that I thought, gosh, once I do this, then that'll be it. That really doesn't happen. You're still at every audition reinventing yourself. Every audition you're still hoping to get it. And so I found this idea of taking the idea of a chorus line and kind of, I've been saying, flipping it upside down as far as taking veteran performers, seasoned performers, folks that have spent their life in the theater, they're still showing up and trying to get on that line. And to me, that idea was really interesting. Mm. So probably Jelana can translate that into something far more eloquent than I just did. God, I hope I get it doesn't go away. And you're always auditioning, always reinventing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting take to take chorus line and do it with actors 40-ish and above versus a young cast. So...
Yeah.
Yeah. So my first question is I'm really curious if there's like, and I don't know if this is actually a phrase or not, but if there's like a relevancy bias for people. And what I mean by that is like, when you pitch the concept and you pitch the, like, we're going to do a chorus line and it's going to be 40 and up. Is there, for people that, for certain folks that like, that's super relevant, is there like a light that kicks on as of like, oh, that's brilliant? Like, do you notice that? Do you know what I mean by that? Like
what has the reception been?
Yeah.
Well, I can say, I mean, because it depended on Marcy's dream sort of transferring to become bigger, right? So that she could share it with others. And when she first mentioned it to me, there was a spark of like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to think about that more. You know, that's worth taking a look at. You know, by golly.
Yeah.
and looking at the piece as written, but through that lens of what it means to dedicate oneself to art for mm-hmm. a lifetime. And I think as we started looking closer at the piece and learning more about the development of the piece, one of the things that felt particularly poignant to me is that if you've grown up with a chorus line as part of the American canon, it's really easy to take it for granted, but that in 1975 and 1974, as they were developing it, it was like groundbreaking in every single way a show could be groundbreaking. Like the way it was developed, the way it was workshopped, the way it was produced, the story that was being told on stage, and the reactions of the people seeing that story for the first time. And that it's a kind of a common misconception that it's about breaking into the business, that we kind of take on the surface that it's young people trying to get their first Broadway show in New York City, but it wasn't. The dancers that participated in the interviews from which the show emerged were all established gypsy dancers who had been dancing for years, but jobs had been drying up as, you know, Broadway theaters were shuttered. It was a terrible economic time in New York City. Right. There were fewer and fewer jobs every year, and they met to kind of say, what are we going to do? And they thought they might form a dance company. Was the first, they didn't meet to make a show. They just met to talk about dancing. And the idea of starting another company became a show called A Chorus Line. And so they're finding that out, learning about that, made this approach make more sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about making it and then stopping because you've made it. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that every day you kind of have to wake up and say, do I still want to do this? You know, that every day we essentially recommit ourselves to being artists, because there is no job where you're just done.
No.
You know? And then Marcy, I remember very early on, shared a story about, I can't remember which actress, but a Tony Award winning actress who had a New York Times article. And she was like, that's my Tony. And I'm going to go to my waitressing job, you know, because even when we might reach a plateau or might reach a pinnacle, it doesn't mean that you just stay there for the rest of your life. You know, you have to keep reinventing yourself. And so it just felt interesting and meaningful to kind of take a look at it from this point of view.
Well, so that's I have a really good question there for that, which is, I just forgot it though.
No!
That's awesome.
Isn't it?
That's why you don't congratulate yourself.
I know.
Well, I could tell
you gotta stay in the flow, Daniel.
I could tell you my reaction when Jolanna approached me.
I'd love that.
But the thing is that Jolanna calls or sends an email and says, Joel, do you wanna? And I say yes, and then I read the rest of it to see what it actually is. Because my experiences with Jolanna are just that it's going to be exciting, it's going to be fun, and we're going to try things, and some of the things will work and some of them won't, and we'll have a great time. It'll be all these wonderful people who are committed to trying something new. And then she told me what it was, and I was like, oh, well, that sounds interesting. A concert version of A Chorus Line, a show that everyone thinks is all about dancing, and we're going to stand at microphones and tell the story.
I didn't realize that it was a concert version.
Well, we're calling it a concept version because it's sort of somewhere between a concert and a full production. So there is dance.
Okay.
There is movement, but there is also actors will be on book for whatever portion of the show they need to be. And there will be some things performed at music stands or stationary. So I think we early on kind of coined it a concept version. Yeah. It's somewhere between concert and full production.
I predict that it will feel fully energized.
Yeah.
If not, you know, fully produced in a conventional way.
Right. So that
no sequins will be harmed in this particular production of A Chorus Line.
No.
Yeah. I feel like A Chorus Line, and correct me if I'm wrong, has that one of these like kind of classic receptions. Like it's got that, like, I think with some arts, like with some art works, like there's a point where after a decade or two after it's been made, it gets put onto this high pedestal. And so what I really liked about what you were saying was it sounds like this creates like a like it brings back that freshness of the original, of the original concept, like that it was so organic and kind of just like, let's piece this together, almost like devised, really.
Right.
How has that been like part of the process as you've been putting pieces yes. together?
Yeah, I think that was really, for me, quite key. So one of the things, there's a beautiful documentary called Every Little Step about the creation of the 2006 revival, mm-hmm. which is really resonant for performers. I was watching it while trying to glue feathers onto fans for Handel's Bestiary.
Good.
So late at night with a hot glue gun, like watching the documentary, and I kept burning my fingers because I kept getting engrossed into the documentary and then kind of losing track of the craft I was doing for this other show. So multitasking, we know, scientifically doesn't really work.
Peak Jelena.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very MOT moment. But it's incredibly engrossing. And even though you're watching these Broadway actors, like the best of the best, auditioning for this revival, for these iconic roles that are so identified with the performers who did them the first time, but there's something that's so different. The first time they were doing their life stories or life stories of people they knew,
mm-hmm.
right? And then, or collages of life stories. They kind of went into a Vitamix blender and, you know, built the show.
Right.
But then in the 2006, they're all triple threats. Like, they're all highly polished Broadway actors. Oh. So there's a real difference between the rawness of the dancer actor singers in the original and the, like, super, you know, polished to a high sheen performers in the 2006, so that it feels to me a little bit, like, too good in some ways. You know, like, missing some of the hyper.
Oh, and we're going to bring that down. We're going to bring that down.
So yeah. Joel is key
right.
for realizing this.
No pressure. Yeah. No pressure. Oh. But we really needed to deliver
some rough, a little rough edge.
I think it's in my wheelhouse.
We need you to bring the mediocrity, John.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, that is something that is. So my high school did a chorus line when it was my
mine
first.
Mine too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think yep. that it's, and I think that speaks to Daniel's assessment of like it being kind of a classic that is kind of easily, because it is a like a low budget, like all you need is a mirror and a chalk line, mm-hmm. like it's and at the end you need the beep, 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 the buzzing the lights at the end. But I mean, because it has the reputation of being like fairly easy to produce, I think that it's kind of, you know, slapped onto stages and mm-hmm. It has kind of lost its edge, I think, as part as like in the public eye. Yeah, in its original incarnation, if you like.
Oh God, it's so heartfelt.
Oh well, my God.
It's like so.
Well, as soon as you said that, I started thinking about kind of the like implications of the title. Like a chorus line has such like a modern art, like it just exists of its own create. You know what I mean? Like it just popped out of.
It's iconic.
It's a chorus
yeah.
line. And
yeah.
it's.
It emerged yeah. fully formed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's so like chilling almost about the whole thing is that you, the whole show, literally you go down the line and you talk to every single person on the line and you mm-hmm. hear their story and each person gets, even if it's just a moment, they get a moment. And then at the end, it's just this like weird homogenized sheen where everyone's like, it's crazy.
How do you lose yourself?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And become one
singular. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's And I think that it's something that gets that kind of like eerie transition, like gets lost a little bit. But, yeah, I love the idea. Like, I want to talk more about, cause when Marcy, you originally told mm-hmm. me about it, it's that you specifically wanted to use performers that were like 40 and over, and add an additional twist, the director yeah. and the choreographer are
20-somethings.
So I'm wondering if you could speak to that dynamic a little bit of, you know, veteran performers being, because the role of Zach, specifically the role of the director, he's this like bossy, like probing force that you never see, and to have that be like someone some like whippersnapper. I think it's a really interesting dynamic. I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
For me, if the original show is so much about growing up, so like in those taping sessions from which the production emerged, so much of what they spoke about in the hours and hours and hours of conversation were their adolescent experiences. That's what they had on tape. And so many of them came from small towns and moved to New York City. And when you think about growing up as an artist, no matter where you're living, as you age, the authority figures get younger and younger. So there's a natural, all of a sudden you go from being the youngest person in the room to like, I think the director is younger than I am, you know, and then that distance gets bigger and bigger. And so it's a very real life, it's just a simple real life experience that you, all of a sudden your doctor is younger than you are, you know? So we're just kind of letting that be. And what is that dynamic when that happens, you know? And what will this Zach be like as someone who is maybe graduated at the top of their class? Like, let's just pretend some things, right? Like a whippersnapper who's accustomed to praise, who's very successful, who's reached this point in his life when he's working with extraordinary artists on a big production, but mm-hmm. like now he's got this great idea about how this audition is going to go. He's going to really revolutionize auditioning by asking personal questions, and then it doesn't exactly go according to plan, and these are human beings mm-hmm. that he has in front of him, you know, not just cogs in his conceptual machine.
Yeah. And sort of what does it do to his assuredness or his confidence throughout the show if he is very bold with this idea, and when things start to unravel or don't,
has to deal with that,
right? That idea, we thought it was really interesting.
I'm wondering what his relationship to Connie is.
Cassie,
that's what I meant.
Cassie is, we cast Cassie, Beth Mulcairn is playing Cassie. She mm-hmm. played Cassie in her junior year of high school. So
really?
Yeah, we have a lot of cast members who are actually reprising roles that they've done decades ago.
Isn't that cool?
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, but like in the show, there is a past between. Yeah.
So Cassie's on the younger end of the spectrum of the 17 characters on the line.
Okay.
So that they kind of meet in the middle. You know, we didn't cast a Cassie in her 60s,
yeah.
for instance. You know, so it's like, it's feasible that Cassie and Zach could have had a past relationship, could have been students together, could have been in graduate school together.
Right.
You know, that they could still theoretically, those lines will make sense. They could have lived that out. They could have been living together while beginning their careers. He could have been the most determined. For me, I think of, like, my first job out of college in a young artist program that was a tour, there was one artist in the program who made everybody else late every time we had to depart on the tour because he was faxing resumes and headshots to other young artist programs. Like, he was so selfish and so singularly focused on developing his own career that it was like, just, it wasn't malicious, it was just completely narcissistic, you know? And so it's very feasible that this Zach could have just been so singularly like, I have got to do this, I have got to chart my course, I have got to do everything that's necessary to make my mark as a director and get a foot in the door, you know, that Cassie could have been a few years ahead of him and just like, mm-hmm. I can't, you know?
Yeah.
So that's just kind of how we're playing mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah.
You know? So our Cassie is older than Zach, but not by an enormous amount.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, and I hadn't thought about Chorus Line in probably,
I feel like I can see the gears
years.
Turning. I can see the memories surfacing.
So which role are you playing?
I'm playing Don.
Okay, and remind me who Don is.
So Don is not the biggest part, not the... He's the first one on the line.
He's the nightclub.
That's right.
So the guy who, you know, and this is such an old timey reference that people aren't even going to get it. but he started tap dancing in strip clubs.
Yeah.
Because they used to be, you know, burlesque halls.
Yeah.
And so there were actually guys would go to watch strippers, and in between there would be variety acts.
Yeah.
Which to a modern man's mind is I love it.
We should bring that back, really.
Yeah. So I'm just excited. I finally get to write off all my strip club expenses as research.
Yeah, perfect.
Really.
Oh.
So that's the only reason I'm doing it.
It's coming. Everything's coming up, Joel.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then your Val and your tits, right?
I am. Yes.
He is the tits.
Yeah.
And ass.
Yes. Tits and ass. That's
yes.
right.
Yeah.
No, I just remember. I mean, because. The
so
pinnacle.
Who are you, Marcy?
Maureen?
No. Yeah, Maureen.
Oh.
I was not cast in
what?
I was not cast. I'm not a dancer. And so they cast all of the... Also, I was a freshman.
Were you just like the backstage singing voice for anyone, like any female that...
So...
Yes, did you...
So, yeah. Insight into my personality. Right. I was not cast, but I joined a stage crew, and then I sang in all the chorus numbers.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah. My next question was going to be, were you on the crew?
I was on the crew. I was in all black, and I made sure that I did not have things to do during the ensemble numbers. So then I stood in the wings, and I sang all the chorus numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because... What I would also do is that I was a nerd. I was a nerd. I was going to be self-deprecating, but I was just nerdy. So what I would do during all the music rehearsals is I would sit outside the chorus room and learn all the parts during the music rehearsals.
Just enough so that you could be seen, but so that you couldn't. But you, like casually, like, not caring, but totally caring.
Totally caring!
But everyone
totally
can see
caring.
How that's, talented I am, but also, like, I
pretty
don't.
Adorable.
Yeah,
and
it's
and really, and that, to me, that's what resonates about this show.
Yes.
Is that, and that's one reason why high schools love to do it, because what it does is tap into the passion
mm-hmm.
of why people do this insane thing of... you know, putting themselves out there in auditions and being incredibly vulnerable and saying, please, I'd like you to judge me, you know, but it's
ruthlessly,
you know, and then in this show, it's even deeper than that, because it's more than just, can I sing or can I dance or can I be who you want me to be? But then it's even more, oh, you actually want to know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, it's these are the people who have not just the skill, but the determination and the drive and a thick enough skin to have succeeded and to still be working at it. And it takes exactly that kind of thing where someone says no, and you're like, all right, well, I'll find a way, and I'm still going to be involved, and you're not going to,
I love that.
You know, put me down, and you're not going to kick me out, and... because that's the kind of personality that everyone on that line has.
Oh, absolutely.
To some extent.
No, my high school theater does this thing at the end of every year where they give awards, and they're called Fitzies because the ghost that haunts the Tosa East Theater is named Fitz.
Well, that makes sense.
And there are senior awards, and there are four senior awards, and one of them is the Trooper Award. And I was the Trooper. I was the Tosa East Trooper in 2008. But I love that. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a write-in category, so like everybody had to like everyone wrote me in, which was so sweet.
Mm.
But it is sincerely like. About, you know, getting knocked down and then just still finding a way to be involved. And, like, and that's what Chorus Line is about. That's what it takes to be in theater. And that's what, I think it's so cool that y'all are, like, taking this and, like, putting it above, like, 20-something dancers. 'Cause it keeps going.
I think we're trying to have a conversation with it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a stylistic obsession at MOT, right? If we're doing an iconic piece or a work from the past that like we just ask, how can we talk to it today?
Yeah.
You know, so it's not about altering it or about imposing a rigid concept or anything. It's just about kind of opening it up to a few maybe new questions, you know, and saying, what happens if you just look at it from over here instead of from over there? It's, we're doing the, you know, we're doing the text and the music as written.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that really sets up my next question really well, which is, do you find that you want to gravitate to specifically thinking about age and how it plays a role in that, or do you find that you just want to rip the entire concept out of that entirely?
No, it's more about, it's gentle questioning, and I think the other, as like, we're in the process of doing this 3-year strategic plan, and you probably got surveys about...
Yeah.
So we're asking a lot of questions about our organization, but I think one of the things that we do routinely is say, why do we do this?
Mm.
Like, why do we do opera? What does it mean to do opera in America in 2017? Why do we make musicals? Like, why do we need to do that as Americans, as musicians? What's the point? Why be an artist? You know? So Chorus Line speaks deeply to that impulse for our organization of... Why keep doing it?
Right.
You know, it is one thing to do it when you're 23. It's another thing entirely to do it when you're 43
mm-hmm.
or 63.
Right. And not even just about the, like, the surface level stereotype of age implications, but just, like, the dedication to the craft, the, like, longevity of the practice.
I think that's one of the things that really emerged as a central theme for us was, you know, that famous song at the end of the show, you know, What I Did for Love. So we asked that question, what would you do for love? So what does a life in the performing arts mean? And if you look at the line, there's a representation of the entire tapestry of performing arts on that line in our show. We have directors, producers, singers, dancers, actors, playwrights, everybody. Everybody on this quilt of performing arts in this city. So this idea of what would you do for love? What have you sacrificed in your life, and what have you given up? What sort of things do you go through emotionally, like Joel was saying, and why do you do this? Why do you go there and get judged and go for something?
It turns out you'll sit outside the choir room door and teach yourself the ensemble part and sing it secretly in the dark. Like, that's what you do for love. Like,
so that is the answer. And it is because there is this passion, this deep love, this need to be a part of it. And that's why we do it. And, you know, what would you do for love? Well, I reckon we'd all say quite a lot.
Yeah.
And for Milwaukee, you know, we live in a small city. So when we look at that line, like, you're looking at all these different artists from different different walks of life, different genres, different specialties, but they are one, like, they're one community.
Right.
And then we're one community. We also have 8, I kind of call them casually the young company, but we have 8 artists in their 20s that are the people who get cut first.
Right.
So that we have a little bit of a dialogue between an older generation and a younger generation going on within the production itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I did see that, like, Rachel Zintek, James Carrington, like, they're the, like, the Bruce, the, you know...
Yep, right.
Like,
Trisha.
Headband guy.
I remember
everyone does.
I remember Bruce because my brother was Bruce in it. Yeah, that's the only reason I remember it. I don't remember any of the other ones. So have any of you been in a Chorus Line before?
I too was Cassie in high school.
You were Cassie?
I was.
Because God, you're a dancer, and a dancer dances.
Because I am a dancer, and a dancer dances. It was too obvious. Like, they could cast no one else. I wore leg warmers to class.
Do we have a picture? We do have a picture of
you as Cassie. I actually
did
wear leg warmers to class.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
Well, I'm old enough that... that Chorus Line was not available to high schools.
Right, yeah.
Actually,
it was still running. It ran for 15
years. So
yeah.
My college did it the year after I graduated. And actually, Michael Bennett's brother directed our production.
Wow.
Is out at Carroll.
Nice.
And so
what
I...
What year was that?
That
Do
would
you know
have been 80, fall of 85.
Okay.
85, 86, somewhere in there. So I've never been in it. I was almost in it one other time, in Milwaukee, and you know, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, I could be in Chorus Line, or this other show came up and I ended up doing the other show. So I've not done it before. So
that's so fun. So with this being your first time in a Chorus Line and it being at a, you know, at an older age than is traditional for a Chorus Line, what has your experience been?
What do you mean, what has my experience been?
So I'm wondering, like, what the, because every show impacts someone, like every show is impactful. Mm-hmm. And you know, you'll find a moment or a line or an aspect of your character that, at least
sure,
this
sure.
has been my experience,
becomes part
that
of you.
It becomes, yeah, exactly. And so I'm wondering, at this point in your career, with this show, what has been most impactful?
Well, since we haven't really started rehearsals.
Oh, that's fair.
what I think is going to be most impactful, mm-hmm. And I'm already feeling emotional about it, is working with this incredible group of people.
Yeah, I think that's emerging as a fairly universal,
you know,
feeling.
You know, if Jelena had said, "Here's the cast. We'd like you to sit in the wings and sing the ensemble numbers,"
quietly dressed in black.
Quietly dressed in black. I would have been like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just to you know, be in the room with these people as we get to create this and you know, play with it with an audience.
One of the things you're reminding me of something that we did ask ourselves early on. It's like, okay, so conceptually, immediately, it is a piece about rejection, right? There are hundreds of people auditioning. They have numbers. You're 242, you're 176. Mm-hmm. They get narrowed down to 17. They get narrowed down to 8, right? So it's fundamentally a piece mm-hmm. about terrible odds mm-hmm. and crippling rejection.
Yeah.
You know, so we said, like, is there any way that we could look at this and make it about embracing each other, or that it is somehow a little less ferociously about those odds? And I think assembling this cast of essentially Milwaukee Theater family in a way, or that it's really about coming together as a tribe to work through this material together and mm-hmm. tell this story. So it is a little bit less about getting cut or competing, and a little bit more about being together in the same room.
Yeah,
I don't know if that even makes sense.
That absolutely makes sense. You know. And because it's all about this, like, idea of what Milwaukee artistry looks like specifically, which I think is really cool. And it's something we talked about recently, and I don't remember if this was on the show or if it was in private with some Milwaukee folks or something, but we were basically talking about the difference between, I mean, there is a plethora of differences and there's a plethora of similarities, but one specific thing we were talking about is how, like, polymathic Milwaukee folks tend to be, and like how wide-ranging their talents tend to be,
yeah.
and like the
yeah.
need for that, and how that can sometimes be lost on Chicago folks. And so I'm curious for you all, partly in what seems to be something like this show that needs that, but also just generally in your work in Milwaukee, what do you think it is about this city that that like calls for that, or fosters that kind of, like,
I mean, I knew when I was living in New York City, I was uncomfortable continuously with the hyper specialization that is
right.
required to be competitive by many people. I mean, there are people who are exuberant, eclectic artists in New York City as well, doing many different things. But I did feel a real continuous pressure to choose.
Yeah.
Like, you may either sing lyric mezzo repertoire and
right.
be an opera singer, or you can belt and, you know, work in the realm of music theater. But, like, those two worlds can seem completely...
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Like, they're just not allowed to relate to each other in
yeah.
some cities, or it's much, much harder. And I do think in Milwaukee, because the demand is that you have to have a complete life.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have other interests. You have to be curious about other things. You know, places like this are a little more open to... exploring
I also
other
think
things.
Milwaukee has such a diverse, rich I mean, like per capita, right, as small as we are, we've got a lot of theaters and a lot of young theater companies. So there's a lot of folks doing different things. So I think it gives you an opportunity as an actor to try different things because the opportunities are so various. And
there's almost, the thing that I've been realizing about it is there's almost a bar for it at this point. Where like, I think when you've been working for a while in Milwaukee, there's like you're only an actor? Like,
what?
What are you doing? Like, what have you been doing with your time here? Like,
right.
Well, I think part of it too is that there are few opportunities to make a living as a specialist in
arts.
Because while there are lots of small theater companies, there's lots of opportunities to be an artist, there are not a lot of opportunities to pay a mortgage being an artist.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, look, if you want to have a life in the arts, you better be versatile.
Right.
You know, I working with an opera company. The last show I did was with a Shakespeare company. The last, you know, and it's like, you got to be able to do that in Milwaukee, or you're just not going to work very often.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
One person who comes to mind when I think of multi-talented and like crazy multi-talented and who is part of the show is Ryan Kapelman.
Sure.
He's music director and choreographer.
And Larry.
So James Sager is
our choreographer.
Oh, gotcha. The show. Okay. But yes, Ryan is playing the choreographer, Larry, and Ryan will be moving and dancing up there with the company. So yeah, I just think it's incredible.
Well,
so.
Because I grew up with Ryan. He and I studied with the same voice teacher. We're a year, like he's a year older than me. And so, growing up with him, I remember that, like, in voice recitals and stuff like that, he was always an option to accompany you.
Right, right.
But then there would also need to be another person brought in to accompany Ryan.
Right.
And just because he's a phenomenal singer, and he's one of the few people that I know that does not have a day job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just, like, I think he worked
music
at Starbucks.
Directs so much.
I think he used to work at Starbucks, but now he just, and, like, his license plate is quadruple threat.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And it's
great.
It's just, like, to me, the epitome of Milwaukee.
Well, during this rehearsal process, he is teaching
in Madison,
and he will be driving from Madison to arrive at Chorus Line rehearsals, you know.
Well, and as soon as we're done recording this, he's going to be at my house and teaching me
right.
my music, so.
Right, right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a really great example of someone in the cast, like so many others that are multi-talented and multifaceted, but it's...
Yeah.
He's doing everything in this show. He will be dancing, singing, playing music, delivering lines. Mm-hmm. He's been part of the production team, music directing the whole thing.
That's insane.
It's going to be pretty cool.
So, how is the dance aspect coming into play so far?
We're figuring it out.
Yeah.
We know it's there. That's one of the questions that's kind of still unfolding. We know it's not the center of the production, but we kind of have this working model mapped out where there's a large stage at Cardinal Stritch.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty large. There's kind of one area that is a bit of an homage to the original production, where some of the more dance-oriented people or the people who are more interested in dancing will be working on combinations, but they might be obscured by music stands or tableau of other artists in an audition situation. So it's not front and center. It's just there as this reverberation or echo of past productions. And then we bring the line forward, and of course there will be movement and maybe dance-esque movement in some of the solo numbers and things like that. And then for the finale, we want to do the Michael Bennett's original choreography again as specifically and accurately as we can do it, but just from the waist up. So that the cast is all at music stands, but doing the head, the very precise head tilt, arm, hand, hat, except with music binders instead of hats.
Cool.
So that we have that echo of uniformity, and that we still honor that from the original, that our 17 eclectic people have to be one at the end, but no kick line.
No minute and a half kick line.
Say like 32 kicks.
But you might not be able to stop us during the bows.
I'm ready to I'm willing to just let the reins go with the bows and what happens happens. Yeah, so I'm enjoying the look on your face though. It's giving me positive feedback that
I think what James would say is that he's really trying to honor the feeling of the original Michael Bennett choreography while still making it accessible to a cast with a wide range of dance abilities and experience. So he's got to incorporate the binders. He's got to take into account the fact that folks might be at music
stands. Sent an email to the cast. So we cast people because something about who they are as an artist spoke to us in terms of these roles. Not necessarily because body type or look or experience would say, you know, Sheila or whatever, but something about that person and their artistic legacy felt like it resonated with that character somehow.
And just a reminder, I'm the strip club guy.
Just case in point again.
There really was nobody else when we
So we sent an email to the cast once they were assembled saying, please respond with either, you know, in terms of movement, A, God, I'm a dancer dances. B, I'm comfortable with movement, but choreography maybe not so much. Or C, I would prefer to stand still, thank you very much. You know, like, just let us know. And then once we collected that information, we knew, okay, you know, these people are highly trained dancers, so they might be doing certain things. These people are really interested in expanding their capacity to dance. Maybe they haven't done a lot of it, but they recognize that they have an opportunity to be with these other artists, and let's see how we can grow together. And then these people have plenty to work on just...
There's people that need to be tying their shoes or drinking water.
Diane Lane is one of our favorite artists at Milwaukee Opera Theater, wrote back saying, I'm really looking forward to showcasing my stretching abilities on the side of the stage. You know, like, I'm very flexible.
And see, I would have loved to have to try the choreography, but with such a short rehearsal
period,
and I'm going to be gone for part of it. Oh, so we have like six rehearsals, and I'm gone for three of them.
Oh God!
So it's like, all right, yeah, I'm not really.
We are going to.
And I don't learn that quickly, and I don't want to look terrible because I know some of the people, Carl Miller and Bill Jackson,
they're
going to look fantastic. Mm-hmm. They're going to look amazing, and I would rather not be compared to them. So I don't stretch as well as Diane.
You can't.
Everyone brings their own gifts.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
Someone has to eat the banana that they would at an audition.
Yeah. Someone needs to, in a panic, look through their bag and realize they don't have their dance shoes and oh no, they can't dance.
Or look over their music.
Obsessively review their lyrics, because even though they've been memorized for months, they're like, oh my God, am I still memorized?
Yeah. Right. You keep throwing names at me that I'm like, oh God, Bill Jackson, Carl Miller, Jesus Christ. He's like,
Jesus Christ is not actually going to be able to make it.
Was he not available? God, well, not interested anymore.
Yeah, it's an incredible cast.
I'm now looking at the...
Marcy the Always Prepared.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just a pile
that will be on her.
And then...
in Marcy's obituary. Yeah. Like, she was always prepared.
Probably be prepared for everything except my death.
She's gonna
die will in hand.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, right here!
Well, the cast is so big that I bring that along that I don't forget or blank on who is involved in what, because then I would feel terrible.
Oh my God.
But it's a really amazing cast. So
podcast gold right now, by the way.
I'm sorry.
Is you reading to a piece of paper and then reacting to it on.
I've had the similar emotional moment that Joel shared, which is, first of all, Milwaukee Opera Theater wanting to partner with Theater Red on this crazy idea that I thought no one else in the world would understand or like. It was sort of something I kept private for a long time, until Mark Burgess, who is the theater chair at Cardinal Stritch said, this is a great idea. You should think about it a little more and share it with somebody. And so that's how that came to be.
And now Marcy is filled with regret.
No, I'm not. I'm so thankful and grateful.
Should have bottled that secret down inside.
Wait. Anytime the music comes on in the car on XM radio, my heart starts to swell and come out of my chest, and I get really emotional just thinking about doing this show. And you look at the people involved, all these people said yes. And something you said, Jelana, was just so wonderful. This idea that I had this little crazy dream, and then I shared it, and then two of us had a dream, and now 30 of us have the same story that we're telling. So this, and we're going to share it with hopefully hundreds more.
Well, and that's why
it's really special.
That's why we do it, right? Yeah. Is because it starts of like as like a germ of an idea, and you're like, stop it, you nerd, stop it. And then it just, and then you tell someone, and they're like, and then it's affirming, and then that person tells someone, and then it just grows and grows, and you're like, that's why we're here.
Yeah,
there is to a great degree.
Yes, crazy.
Yeah, we will not know what this is until.
Well, especially with only 6 rehearsals.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other thing. I keep calling you Marcy. Oh my God,
sitting right here.
I hardly know Maureen. We've barely just met.
Yeah, right.
sometimes I want to blame the pain meds for my. Yeah.
Why? What do they have you on? Anything good?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I got my tonsils out a month ago.
Yeah.
And I really am better, but I'm not sure I have full use of my brain.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's coming. But it's still slightly addled, I think.
I feel like there's a delay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right?
Yeah.
It's just a little weird, but it's so close to being, like, there again. But then, yeah, I can look right at Maureen and say the name Marcy because...
No, it's fine.
Because Sunday morning.
No, it's fine. It's not like we've collaborated on a couple projects or anything. It's totally fine.
Like my very first directing job, too.
Really?
Yeah, Lumberjacks.
That was not your first directing.
It was my first outside MOT.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was my first.
So it's not like we were together for any kind of personal landmark.
No, yeah. It's not like that was also my, you know, Milwaukee professional debut or anything. It's, like, it's not like we, like, grew together or anything like that. I don't know.
What were we talking about before I screwed up?
The resignation of this show.
Six
rehearsals. Is that even a word?
Six rehearsals?
Right. The willful not knowing of what we're going to make together. Mm-hmm. So we have a structure. The structure is intact of the perspective of how we're looking at the piece, some rough outlines of where we think people might be on stage or what things might look and feel like. But really, until these 26 people are together in the room making it in process, like, we're not going to know what the show will look and feel like until, you know, definitely when we open. Mm-hmm. part of assembling a cast like this, the rehearsal requirements are limited partly because of financial resources, but partly because these are really busy people.
Mm-hmm.
And so to gather them together, we had a 3-week window and we sent a survey asking, could you do it here, here, or here? We got those responses. You know, everyone was available in August, so that meant, wow, that's a month earlier than I was hoping to start the Milwaukee Opera Theater season, but I guess we're going to do that, you know, since everyone said yes. But then it's like, oh, we really want Joel to be in this, but he's traveling for 3 days. Okay. You know, like, you just figure out how to make it work. So yeah, it's going to be a really condensed process, but that's one of the reasons why we are on book, so that we're not daring people to leave every, you know, safety net behind, but we are pushing for like full emotional realization of things.
Well, for me, that's one of the exciting things about the project too, is because, you know, me and I imagine everyone else, we've done lots of shows where we create a thing and fine tune it and then share it with an audience. This is definitely going to be a thing that we're creating somewhat on the fly with the audience.
Yeah.
It's like nothing's going to be locked in by the time we've got the audience. Which, for me, when I look around the room and see all these people, it's like, oh, I'm fine with that. We're not improvising, but it's going to
be... Oh, yeah, the colleagues are so strong.
But it's like, right, but it's like I totally trust these people to show up, and it's like we don't necessarily have a thing worked out here, but it's going to be great, whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone on this list that... Like, this is the first time working with this person?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, there are a lot. And one of the things that we learned from the artist surveys that we sent was, like, what were your expectations going into the project, and, you know, were they met? And for, as we've received artist responses back, people who have done multiple Milwaukee Opera Theater productions develop an ease with the process, but some of the people who were doing their first show said, like, would have been nice to know a little bit more about what that would be like. You know, like, very, like, could have used a heads up that it's kind of different than other rehearsal processes. You know, so I think I'm learning, like, oh, we can do a better job of just kind of sharing to the extent that we can a heads up. So it's a blended cast of, like, I would say most of the people have worked with Milwaukee Opera Theater before, and many with Theater Red as well. Mm-hmm. But there are a few people who are new, and I'll try and take the time to be like, okay, you know, it's 1 week, right? Okay.
It's very, you know, build your own.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
I keep saying
there's a lot of artistic agency.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To make your own choices and your own contributions, as opposed to being told exactly what to do.
I keep thinking of it as being really exciting to say 1 week of rehearsals, one singular sensation. I have all these chorus line puns that I can just keep going up. But I mean, I think it really harkens back to that raw energy and feel that the original version had, and that excitement and nervousness that we will all have as we bring this piece to life in front of
I think we are trying to capture a little bit of that, just a little bit of frisson.
Yeah.
One of the things I loved was in the original, they had these massive amounts of tapes, right? Many all-night rap sessions generated a lot of interview material, and then workshopped it at the Public. And when they did it for Joseph Papp, it was 4.5 hours long. Like, when they just did a showcase of, here's what we developed, 4.5 hours chorus line material.
Well,
you know, so, like, just the vibration of them going through their, every character had songs and monologues and was fully realized. And it was only after that they built the montages and started to layer them and condense, you know, multiple dancers into one character.
Yeah. Do you know if there was a devised tradition before that?
No, there was no history of workshopping a piece.
Yeah.
Before that, you wrote a Broadway show, you did an out-of-town tryout, you received critical reviews, you revamped, and then you mounted it in New York City. So this is, like, the first record of a piece that was workshopped in what is now a much more conventional way of developing a piece.
Right.
I'm sure there was devised theater or interview theater where things emerged from real life.
But not on this scale.
Not on Broadway.
Yeah.
Not on Broadway.
Not on Broadway.
Oh, that's
And there are
true.
So many
You know,
reasons.
Like, you're looking at the American commercial theater. So they came from the song and dance musicals.
I'm sure there were lots of fringe pieces that were similar.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's so much about the show that...
it was the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, like, you look at other things that were going on at the same time.
I mean, in so many ways, the show shouldn't work.
Right.
You know, and in all the ways that it's groundbreaking, other people did those groundbreaking things.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you've seen enough fringe theater, you've seen it's like, oh, that's a totally different way of thinking about a show.
Right.
But that was horrible. You know?
Yeah.
It's those groundbreaking things don't necessarily make it work.
Yeah.
Or make it be the thing that it's like, people don't go to the theater and say, oh, I'm going to go to have a groundbreaking experience. No, it's the stories that resonate. And it's the, you know, that's what makes it work.
And
then the other stuff makes the show iconic, I think.
Yeah.
When we are so familiar with it, right? We grew up with it. But I've read accounts of dancers who saw the original production. Like, it opened at the Public long before it transferred to Broadway. But, like, they were just flabbergasted. They were so emotionally moved by seeing their stories as the center of a significant production. Like, those were stories that weren't told, the human stories of chorus dancers, and that it was so engaging. I mean, they were just wrecked, you know. Mm-hmm. They were wrecked. And then when they saw there's, like, the stories of their colleagues being told on Broadway, like,
and
you know,
it rests, I mean, not just to see, hear the story, but then to see
audiences going
audiences
zonkers for it.
It's like, oh, so you people care about these stories too.
Right.
I think that
is
kind of
a very human show.
Thing.
It's a very, very human show, even though it's telling a really specific story about a certain kind of artist.
Mm-hmm. It's really a show about growing
it's
up.
About
and
families.
And everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, I don't know. I was going to just, like, say the same thing, but I don't know.
It can hide in all the flash, you know, but the, like, the meat of the piece is so, because it is so real.
Yeah. Well,
really?
A few minutes left. Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the last
Can
things.
I call Maureen Marcy one more time?
Yes, yeah. Please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us, Marcy.
Of course, okay. Anytime.
Yeah. So one of the last things we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. So it's each of you if you want to. It doesn't have to be anything. Sometimes it's very obvious, like an upcoming performance that you're on the podcast to talk about. But it can also be self-care things, you know, other artists that you think are doing dope work, you know, TV shows you're catching, books, movies,
media you're consuming. Yeah.
Well, should I take the easy, obvious one?
Sure.
So if you'd like to come check out our unique vision and see A Chorus Line with a cast of just great celebrated Milwaukee performers, that is taking place on Sunday, August 27th and Monday, August 28th at 7:30 p.m. at the Nancy Kendall Theater at Cardinal Sturts University right on their campus. So 2 nights only, 1 singular sensation. I promised you another pun.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of these.
Oh, you can just use up your minute rolling through more.
So we'd love to see you on the line. And it's been just a dream come true for me, so.
Nice.
I was recovering from my tonsillectomy. I read Jim Henson's autobiography, which was extraordinary. And then I read a book called All the Lights On about Michelle Hensley's company 10,000 Things in the Twin Cities, which performs high-quality theater for marginalized audiences in prisons and drop-in centers and housing centers. And I cannot recommend All the Lights On highly enough. It's just incredible. It was incredible, emotionally gripping and validating and really extraordinary. And now I'm reading a book called Powers of Two about creative partnerships.
Cool.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
We perform on Sunday and Monday. The Wednesday of that week is preview for another show that I'm in. I'm doing Twelfth Night with Bard and Bourbon, which is cool. One of the local drunk Shakespeare companies.
One of the local.
This is Wisconsin. We're more than one. So, you know, I auditioned for them and at the same time said, can't make the first 3 weeks of rehearsal. Or 8 of the last 10 days of rehearsal, and they were like, oh, that sounds cool.
It is drunk Shakespeare.
It is drunk Shakespeare, and I'm doing a bit of a cameo role. I'm doing Antonio in Twelfth Night.
Is this the company that only one of the people gets drunk, and they don't know who?
Well, they do know who. We do plan in advance, but since this show is about twins, we're going to double up and do 2 drunk actors each night.
Cool.
So.
And does that drunk actor rotate?
Yes. Okay. So everybody knows in advance, so you can do it safely. You can, you know, eat or whatever you need to prepare. You don't have to work early the next morning. You have a ride home, all that. So it's known in advance. We're finalizing the schedule right now.
What's the bar for how drunk someone should be for that?
So you can still say your lines.
Right.
And that there's an element of surprise that is for the rest of the cast. And to me, that's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Right.
So for me, the classic was I performed with them with Macbeth earlier this end of May, and Lady Macbeth was a brilliant drunk. So during the scene in which Malcolm and Donalbain are told that their father's been murdered, she while the scene's going on, she just walked over and said, "Sorry about your dad." So it's great because it's a fully formed Shakespeare production, and then you just add this twist to it where some of the actors are going to be drunk, and so
anything can happen.
Yeah, anything can happen. Right.
So it's really not that different than regular theater.
Well, people ask me, is this the first time that?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I can't say it's the first time I've performed drunk.
Cool.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there are a lot of ways that you can do that. First off, you can head over to scoffeemag.com. What?
Being very casual about this.
I know.
Time.
That's our website. We have articles there. We'll have a few up over the next week or so. Otherwise, you can head over to Facebook under Scoppy Magazine, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr at Scoppy Mag, S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we need a little bit more help. If you are in a position to give, you can head to our website, scoppymag.com. You can go to our About section. You can do a one-time donation. If you choose to do that, you have our utmost thanks. You will also receive a handwritten thank you note. If you choose to give on a monthly level, there are some cool incentives. Our next monthly donor will receive a bag of half-wit coffee or a month of free yoga at B Yoga Andersonville down in Chicago. So yeah, it really means the world to us for those who give. So please consider doing so. So give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep. Woohoo.
Woo! Okay, bye.